Bill's on second reading. Senate File 28, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 28, Revisers Bill.
Senate File 28, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senate File 121, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 121, Wyoming Pharmacy Act Amendments.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
Second File 121, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 2.
Senator Perkins?
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. President. Let me find my bill. It seemed like I could get it today when I put this one together. Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, I'd move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 121 and ask the body for favorable consideration. What this does at the bottom of page 2, lines 22 and 23, is it takes out the requirement to change it back from 2 years to 1 year. In doing that, it seems to me, Mr. President, that any physician or any now practitioner who prescribes can prescribe that for 6 months or 2 months or however many refills or up to 1 year. But what you have is there's a lot of people out there. I'm one of them. My wife is one of them. My parents were one of them that have prescriptions. I've taken a prescription for 12, 15 years now, and it's the same prescription. It's been the same prescription. It's not going to change. And this bill says that I have to go back and see my doctor every year to have that renewed instead of every other year. And I think there's a lot of people out there. And ultimately, you've got the practitioner has the discretion to make it a shorter period of time. If we're talking about opioids or something like that, those prescriptions will only be for one or two refills or a certain number of pills or a certain length of time. But some of those, we have these maintenance drugs, whether it's Synthroid or other types of things, if you've got thyroid problems or other issues, those medicines are not going to change. And as long as your doctor's comfortable prescribing that for up to 2 years, I don't see why that would be a problem. So ask for your consideration of this amendment.
Senator Baldwin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I would not have a strong objection to that. I would just toss out to the body that standard of practice is 1 year, except for the controlled substances. Those are varying things from 3 months to 6 months to a year. And as a good senator said, a specified number of refills. I will tell you just off the top of my head now, the standard of practice is you don't have to necessarily go see that doctor or that practitioner every year. I have patients the good senator gave a perfect example, and that is Synthroid, levothyroxine. I don't require that my patients come see me every year, but I do require that they have a blood test every year. And if they provide that blood test to me, then we refill it, and sometimes they don't have to see me. But I would suggest to you that 1 year is a standard of practice for most refills, not only in Wyoming, but in most other states, if not all other states. I will be voting no on this amendment, but I would leave that up to you. I think 1 year is a good thing, but that's entirely up to the body. Thank you, Mr.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, we did hear in committee that the surrounding states have gone to a one-year standard. However, I'm going to vote for this amendment. I think we're starting to see one of the things that is driving up our medical costs, and that is unnecessary utilization. I think there are some medicines where the two-year does work. We may have to be fierce with the Board of Pharmacy that we mean it, so they don't just say something else in regulations. But I think we'd be better off sticking with the two-year standard. I think in general, 1 year is good practice for a reason, but not always. And the law ought to give the flexibility to go further.
Further discussion before the sponsor speaks for a second time. Further discussion? Senator Perkins, do you wish to speak for your second time? Ready for the question. All in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 121. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has passed. Senate File 121, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objection. It is so ordered. Senate File 123, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Project.
Senate File 123, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate File 125. What time is it out there? Will the reading clerk please read in the Senate File?
Senate File 125, Permanent Mountain Daylight Saving Time.
Senate File 125, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear no objections. So ordered. Senate File 131, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 131, State Revenues and Expenditure Review.
Senate File 131, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. It is so ordered. Senate File 138, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 138, Certified Public Accountants Amendments.
Senate File 138, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 140, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 140, an act relating to highways. Senate File 140, I-80 Project Master Plan.
Senate File 140, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 146, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 146, Community College District Board Voting.
Senate File 146, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 152, Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, I'd ask that the second reading of Senate File 152, Hathaway Student Scholarships, be laid back for one additional day, please.
Without objection, Senate File 152 will be laid back. Senate File 155, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 155, Bar and Grill Liquor License Increase.
There is a second reading amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that in?
Senate File 155, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 21.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 155. Fellow senators, a lot of thought has gone into this bill. We had a good discussion yesterday about what the sponsor and the co-sponsors were trying to do and the conversation we were trying to initiate. What this does in the final category, which is in our biggest municipalities, this suggests that we allow no more than three rather than allowing six new licenses out onto the market. Mr. President, this frees up some licenses. It addresses some of the concerns of those entrepreneurs that we talked about, those opportunities that come in from outside our communities. I believe, if my calculations are correct, this probably only affects our two biggest cities. There is a bar and grill license available here in this community today. This would allow for three additional, and then up in the big community in the center of the state, it would allow three more additional licenses. And in the meantime, Mr. President, I have sat down for a visit with the chairman of our Corporations Committee, and we had a good visit about the need for a more comprehensive look at some of these bar and grill situations, these liquor licenses that we've talked about, the several different levels, and where we're going to go from here, and how we can ease our way to a free market system. And he agrees that he will suggest that to the management committee. So I believe that this accomplishes what we set out to do, and it also gives a little bit of a springboard to that topic, perhaps going into the interim, Mr. President. So I hope you'll support the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, neither for nor against the amendment, and I'm also reminded that the sponsor of this amendment is also a co-sponsor of the original bill. It will affect more than just the two largest cities. Laramie, would have gotten six new ones. This will cut the number of new licenses in half to them, and it'll cost Gillette one more license. That's as near as I could gather in the quick amount of time that I had to look at this. I think if indeed we're going to be looking at this, or if it will be looked at in the interim, the entire formula, I don't know that this is necessarily going to harm anybody.
Senator Case?
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I do appreciate the bringer of the amendment. He did come and we had a great discussion. But one slight correction is I won't be recommending anything to the Management Council. Our committee will, and we will discuss it. So I can't speak unilaterally for the committee about that. It's a great committee, and we'll come up with a plan.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I will confess I am confused and would like the sponsor of the amendment to clarify any second time. If we pass this amendment, are all the communities that are going to get new licenses under the bill going to get some new licenses, or is it only the two largest communities plus Laramie that will get new licenses? I'm confused as to which way this works.
Senator Burns, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. Everybody will still get new licenses. The larger cities will all still get new licenses. What this amendment tends to is the larger cities who would have gotten more, up to six, in some cases four, this amendment recaps it down to three. So all the larger cities will get new licenses. They'll just get fewer.
Any other discussion? Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, the idea was economic development, and in the larger cities, three does not make economic development. Laramie testified that they could sell 20 of these licenses. I'm sure there's other cities that could do as much. Three limits it too much. I think six is a good number. I'm against the amendment.
Senator Case, do you wish to speak for your second time?
I do, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. So this whole liquor area, you know, communities have the right to decide kind of what they want. And what they have, with the repeal of prohibition, states were allowed to regulate liquor. That's why there's limits on these licenses. So I'm kind of advocating a go slow before you go fast approach, because what the truth is that not all communities are the same. And, I don't know that every town wants to be like the community of Albany County that we're talking about that would have just all of these liquor places. It's a very different kind of community, and I'm not sure we should go that far yet. We have a say in the matter. Local communities have a say in the matter. It's a walk before you run kind of situation.
Anybody else before the sponsor speaks for his second time? Anybody else? Senator Landon, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Really appreciate the good discussion and the words from our chairman in the back corner. I really think that what he just said has great merit. I think that all this does is give us the policy question of just how far we want to go. And this is a little more cautionary. I think that it balances a little bit better up in my neck of the woods. There's a lot of concern about those folks who are already in business, as well as, this opens the door a little bit and allows for some development until we can get a better handle and figure out how quickly we do want to go. So on or against it, I think it's a good compromise. Thank you.
Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 155. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has failed. Senate File 155, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senate File 156, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 156, State Government Efficiencies.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File 156, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 14.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 156. Mr. President, what this is about is the Medicaid program, which is one of our big money programs and needs some careful look if we're going to look at state government efficiencies. Mr. President, what this amendment does is it goes into the list of things that the commission, this commission we're creating, shall do and adds a new subject, examining opportunities for savings in Medicaid. And the real savings, I think, are in the first two line items. I am hearing anecdotally that we are running a major error rate with the new eligibility system on what I would call the medical part of Medicaid, not the nursing homes, not the developmental disabilities, but the other categorical eligibilities. We're getting a lot of people who in no way are eligible for Medicaid getting enrolled in Medicaid, and I'm hearing it both from people who've had some experience with the old system of how we enroll people and more particularly from people that are responsible in various medical institutions for the patient billing and that sort of thing that see who's coming in and who's on Medicaid. And I think there's clearly some of that's going on. What I can't tell you, Mr. President, is it 1% of the total, which would imply maybe $4 million a biennium, or is it 20%, which would imply $80 million a biennium? It's somewhere in that range. And if it's toward the upper end of that range, we could save big money by going in and auditing. Health Department's not going to do it on their own. I've talked to them. They say, oh, we check it electronically, and that's fine. That takes care of it. I hear from elsewhere that doesn't, and it isn't all that reliable. I think we need to take a hard look at that and see what the magnitude of the problem is. That's what this amendment does, and I urge its adoption.
Further discussion, Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, and it pains me to be against the amendment because there's a great deal of merit to it. But I think the firm that we're looking at doing hiring is going to have a much broader portfolio than this. What you're looking for here is a firm with very specialized expertise in healthcare, and it's probably a good it is a good idea. What we're looking for in this efficiency and government group is that they're going to go through the full panoply of state programs and give us a broad variety of recommendations. And I hate to get them bogged down on just the Medicaid program. They will undoubtedly come back with recommendations on the Medicaid program and undoubtedly may come back and recommend that we undertake this kind of experiment. But I don't know that we want this to become as large a focal point of this project as this amendment would seem to direct, on and against the amendment.
Senator Anderson.
And on and for the amendment, just because that's where we spend a lot of our money. If they're not looking at health care and Medicaid, then they're not looking at a broad take of the state government. On and for the amendment.
Senator Landon.
You're on a roll now.
Yeah, you good.
My only caution here is knowing the kinds of reductions in personnel that will be recommended in your budget that you'll receive next week. And I guess my question for the bringer of the amendment, what kinds of personnel are we talking about and what kinds of expenditures are we going to, I assume, I haven't completely tracked this, but this comes out of what we will already budget to the Department of Health. If you could please clarify that a little bit, and knowing if it takes additional personnel to pull this off, we're eliminating a lot of personnel. So that's my caution.
Anybody else for their first time before the sponsor? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think on and for the amendment, I think the only caution or the only hesitation I have in the amendment. I think it's important. These are big dollar items, and if you want to have big savings, you got to where the money's spent. I mean, you don't find hundreds of millions of, or tens of millions of dollars where that kind of money isn't being spent. The only caution I have, and be interested to hear from the sponsor of the amendment on a second time, is as you said, I would hate for the commission to get bogged down, and ultimately this becomes the sole focus of that. And so I'm wondering. I think we need to look into this. I think the commission needs to look at this and take a hard look at it. And it may not be that you can get there in the short time frame that we've got to do in this thing. And I'm just so I think it's we want them to direct them. We surely want them to look in there, and it's just, the point is to kick over the rocks and see what's underneath them. And so I wonder if we look at that, if he's willing to work with us to make sure that this doesn't become the sole focus, but becomes one of the foci, I think is the correct plural of that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Anybody else for their first time? Senator Scott, for your second time.
Mr. President, this is big money here, and it has to be looked at if we're going to really do something about efficiencies in the state government. Frankly, I would not use the same consulting firm that you're going to use for the broad sweep of things. On this one, I would, if I were on the commission, I would either assign it to the Department of Audit or the Department of Audit plus the Department of Family Services, some of their people, or hire a local CPA firm, draw a sample, and find out what we've really got there. And then the recommendations are, okay, what do we do about that following up? If you do it the one way, it could take some people in the state government, not in the health department. They're not going to do it right. Do it in some third party, either a CPA firm or an audit department or something like that. It's a quick, you draw a sample. 500 or 1,000, that'll give you a notion as to what the magnitude of the problem is, and then we can go say, is it so big that we've got to add an eligibility determination and it would pass, or no, we're overestimating the amount of larceny that there is in the human soul. I don't think we are. And one way or another, we need to get at this because our state agency is not going to, and I am sure hearing a lot about people that are getting on that are in no way eligible.
We are voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 156. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
That amendment has passed. Senate File 156, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections? So ordered. Senate File 169, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 169, Migratory Bird Refuge.
Senate File 169, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections? So ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
This, Mr. President, I move third reading consent list as follows. Thank you. Senate File 94, Franchise Business Relationships. Senate File 102, Board of County Commissioners, Designee, Zoning Certificates. Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses. Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees, Chairman. Senate File 147, Livestock Inspections and Investigators. And Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Valuations, Farmstead.
Would any member of the Senate like any of these removed from the consent list? Having read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 94, Franchise Business Relationships. Senate File 102, Board of County Commissioners, Designee, Zoning Certificates. Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses. Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees Chairman, Senate File 147, Livestock Inspections and Investigators, and Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Valuation Farmstead. Will the Chief Clerk please call roll for the consent list?
On the consent list, Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout?
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 94, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 94, 30 aye. Senate File 102, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 102, 30 aye. Senate File 139, are there any changes? Barnard, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 139. 29 aye, 1 no. Senate File 145, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 145, 30 aye. Senate File 147, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 147, 30 aye. Senate File 148, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 148, 30 aye.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 94, Franchise Business Relationships. Senate File 102, Board of County Commissioners Designee Zoning Certificates. Senate File 139, Game and Fish Licenses. Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees, Chairman. Senate File 147, Livestock Inspections and Investigators. And Senate File 148, Agriculture Tax Valuation Farmstead have passed the House. The Senate. Whoa. Point of order. Yeah. Senator Rothfuss, you have the floor.
The Senate, Mr. President.
Oh. Senator Rothfuss, that reminds me of my colleague from Park County when I first was elected to the Senate telling me to leave the House. And Senator Wasserberger, you got me confused by some of that. Anyway, thank you for the point of order. They have passed the Senate. Senate File 127. Third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 127, Exterior Residential Storm Damage Repair Contract, sponsored by Senator Pappas. An act relating to consumer protection.
There is a third reading amendment. Will the Chief Clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 127, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move third reading amendment, or third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 127, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Senators, we did get some feedback from roofing contractors after providing the first reading amendment, and the issue with the 10-day cancellation period seemed to be a little problem for our reputable contractors. What happens is that if on day one the consumer and the company that is insuring him actually negotiates a price and the insurance company is agreeable, the language in this bill would still allow the consumer 10 days to back out of that contract. And so what's what would happen is the roofing contractors would then just have to wait 10 days to make sure that they would be covered and not back out before they were ordered materials. So what we've done now with this amendment is provide a waiver. So if the consumer would like to get his roof going immediately because of the quick turnaround of the insurance company, then upon signing a waiver and providing that insurance claim, a copy of that insurance claim to the roofer, then we can waive the 10 days and they can get going right away. So if you look at the bill, basically line 10, the consumer may waive the 10-day cancellation period if the insurer provides written notice that the claim has been approved. The waiver shall be in writing, signed by the consumer, and accompanied by a copy of the insured's notice of approval. And then in line 18, we're also putting it in the cancellation notice, the written cancellation notice. So this, again, was brought by industry. They think that this is a good way to keep bills, roofs being repaired quickly, especially when there's a lot of events happening. They don't want to wait the 10 days. So I urge your passage.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question being called for. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 127. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 127 has passed. Senate File 127, having read three separate times the question is, shall the Senate File pass? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 no.
Senate File 127, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected of the Senate, Senate File 127 has passed the Senate. Senate Joint Resolution number 8, third reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 8, School Construction and Renovation Constitutional Amendment, sponsored by Senator Meyer, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution by creating a new section authorizing the legislature to require school districts to impose a special tax on property within the school district for the purpose of construction of public school facilities.
Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, without objection, I'd like to lay this amendment back.
Without objection, Senate Joint Resolution number 8 is laid back for third reading on Monday. Senate Joint Resolution number 9, third reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 9, Public School Financing, sponsored by Senator Kinski. A joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to specify that the legislature determines the adequacy of public school funding and prohibiting courts from requiring funding beyond that prescribed by law.
I'm reminding the members of the Senate that this is a constitutional amendment requires two-thirds vote. Further discussion? Senate Joint Resolution number 9, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert? Hastert, no. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Bonfladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 4 no.
Senate Joint Resolution number 9, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate Joint Resolution number 9 has passed the Senate. Do we have any messages from the House or Standing Committee reports?
February 3, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom is referred House Bill 25, Dry Bean Commission Member Terms, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz, Senator Hicks, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred House Bill 129 engrossed, Food Freedom Act Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Hicks, Meyer. Noes, Senators Emmerich and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole for consideration of bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Cope. Senator Meyer, did you wish to be recognized?
No.
Okay. Senator Cope.
Random strobe. The other V is determined. If there is an error,
well,
it's significant.
The committee of the whole, please come to order.
First bill for our consideration is Senate File 170. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 170, Unmanned Aircraft, an Act Relating to Aeronautics, sponsored by Senator Dockstetter, was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm moving the committee the whole Rice report. It do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 170, Unmanned Aircraft. There was a standing committee amendment. I would wish that the reading clerk read that in at this time.
Senate File 170, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, corrected copy, page 1, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 170 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. I'm going to explain the amendment. The sponsor has provided for us an engrossed copy of the amendment in the original language, so anybody who wants to follow along, that'll be quite helpful. I'll go in essentially the page one stuff is just some housekeeping on the first section. So get into page two, lines 8 through 12. We had a good discussion in committee about I guess the wonderful world of drones and the different sizes of drones. Essentially, there's the size of drone that we're talking about in this piece of legislation that we want to enable is from 55 pounds on up. There's a lot of discussion about the 0.55 pounds to 55 pounds, and that's gross laden weight, Mr. Chairman. That is in the federal CFR 107.3. So we went into definitions, defined both those weights, made sure that we're just dealing with the 55 and over, and then at the end of the bill, we felt we didn't want to get into the smaller craft, and so we exempted them in subsection K on page 4. So that pretty much explains what we did to the bill. We provided some rulemaking authority to the fullest extent provided by federal law for the 55-pounders and up. And with that explanation, I'd call for the question on the amendment.
We're on the amendment. Any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question being called for. All in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It's been adopted.
Mr. Chairman, for explanation of why this bill is needed and a little bit more about the world of flying cars, the good Senator Dockstader.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe why you only see one name on there is because the topic of flying cars, if I came around to you and said, well, you know, you want to jump on my flying car bill, you might say, what have you been consuming, Dockstader? So what we're doing, though, folks, here is we're gearing up the state to move forward. There's about 38 states, as I looked into this, that are out there kicking this around, starting to move forward with it. You know, coming out of the session, you think it's a little bit strange, but you heard of an announcement out there of another big company out there. They're starting to look at these types of things. Sometimes they're controlled within. Sometimes they're controlled outside by computerized. We're talking about leaving the little guys alone with the little drones, something a little bigger than that. So what we're doing is gearing up for something, actually in the west side of the state later this fall. We're going to have a conference with a bunch of folks in the business world come together and start to look at this. And obviously we want to talk Wyoming to them. You'll see another handout in your box there of what's happening in another state back east where they're working on a 50-mile customized corridor for unmanned aircraft to lure companies to their state. How about that? What a concept. And that's in your handouts there, folks. So what the bill does, it makes a little adjustment to our rules, allows us to promulgate those rules back with the definitions. We left out the little guys under 55 pounds, moved it up and positioned us to take on these bigger type of aircraft. And then again, back and through the bill, you see where we've given the commission authority to start to work it out, to promulgate the reasonable rules to the extent possible to tie in with the federal government and what they do. What we're doing here, folks, in a nutshell, is positioning the state to start to work on this very thing that other states are starting to work on. We just don't want to be too far behind. We want to be out there working on it. Get ready for this conference. I'm going to ask you a little bit later in the session. We'll pass around a nice invitation, a greeting to these folks as they come together for the conference to say, hey, in Wyoming, we're interested in this. Is it all that unfeasible? Back in the 40s, a couple of guys got together and said, can we build mountain aircraft that you can actually land in the mountains, slow-flying aircraft, and make them, you don't need a big runway, you can put them down on dirt strips up in high mountain terrain. That was back in the 40s, so they built a big garage out in a little community out west, and guess what? 2017, they're still building those low-flying, slow-flying airplanes in a little community out in the far west, and people from around the world travel to see those planes, pick up their planes, and transport them out.
somewhere along the line, those fellows back in the 40s said, we can do this. We got to get started. And they did. And this is what we're trying to do out here in Wyoming. We're trying to be a part of this whole new world that's starting to open up, larger drones. 170 positions us for that, for being able to do that. We want to be a part of it. We're not just putting legislation together. We're backing it up with a conference, working with another, with the governor's office to bring it all together later this fall and show those folks that we're serious about it, not only with our legislation, but with a welcome, and see what we can do to start making things happen in Wyoming. So with that, members of the Senate, I ask for your favorable approval of 170.
Discussion on Senate File 170. Further discussion? You ready for the question?
Question.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question for the sponsor. If we get somebody that is genuinely concerned about their privacy with regard to these things when they're flying low, should we copy out of our game and fish laws and regulate the size of weapon that can be used to take one of these things?
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you. Well, the size of weapon, it could be about anything. I don't think we need to go into game and fish laws. The privacy, I think, will be that's going to be more of an issue with those little guys, the little drones that are buzzing around, that you hear those coming around. That's the issue there. We're trying to do something that's actually going to develop into what you're seeing, these corridors, these unmanned aircraft. We think this is a little strange now, but things are moving fast. I wouldn't think that somebody would have told me just a few years ago that I'd pack a little computer around in my pocket and have access to the world. I said, no, that's not going to happen. Things are happening fast, folks. Appreciate your support.
Senator Meyer.
And the federal regulations provides for some restrictions on overflights in different areas. There are some privacy things.
Oh, I got you. Hold on, Senator Meyer. I got you plugged in with Senator Case over there. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't want me to do that.
No. I don't roll that way.
Be careful. Mr. Chairman. There's some federal regulations that provide for privacy areas where they can't be overflown. And this is one of the things that I think has piqued the committee's interest, especially on the small drones, as far as those privacy, no trespass situations. So I think we'll take care of it, but I think the federal government has a good start on those 400 feet and under situations. These are actually qualified flying cars to go over 400 foot and operate like an aircraft.
Question? You ready for the question? Question's on Senator Meyer's motion to Senate File 170 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Senate File 170 is passed Committee of the Whole.
Okay.
The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 95. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 95, Early Retirement, an Act Relating to Retirement, sponsored by Senator Meyer, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Kinski, and Peterson. Noes, Senators Ellis and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it return without recommendation. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Dockstader, Acting Chairman.
Senator Dockstader or Senator Peterson.
Wait a minute.
We should have saved that CPR bill.
Yeah, we could have.
Do we need Senator Baldwin? Yeah,
we got it. Senator Peterson. This bill really affects me, Mr. Chairman. Hold on. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 95. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that to be read in at this time. Please.
Senate File 95, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Senator Peterson.
I would move Senate Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 95. And for an explanation of the amendment and this good bill, I would refer to the good senator, Senator Meyer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to do a brief overview of what the bill was, the overview of what the committee did, and then turn over the explanation of the standing committee amendment to the good Senator Case. Worked closely with the committee, Senator Case, Senator Kinski, on the standing committee amendment as well as the rest of the committee. Essentially, we started out with a bill that affected about 2,000 employees. Agencies were a little bit concerned about how it could negatively affect them, and we've gotten together and cut that down to less than 1,000. We put a bunch of flexibility in the standing committee amendment for the different folks. UW was in this. UW is doing an excellent job in their own retirement efforts right now, early retirement. In fact, they're not hiring back anybody in their early retirement thing. They've got a 100% elimination of the positions that they had in their first round there. So they're really cutting to the quick and doing a good job. I think it was the committee's understanding that UW is doing such a good job, we don't have to do anything for them in 95. There is a committee, a whole amendment that will fine-tune the standing committee amendment. We won't work on that one now, but at this time I turn over the explanation of the standing committee amendment to the good senator from Lander, Senator Case.
Senator Case on the standing committee amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have asked to be passed out a tracked-in version of the standing committee amendment. It's fairly significant changes to the legislation. It's a copy of this bill with my name in the upper right-hand corner. And, Mr. Chairman, the bill was really an exciting thing when it was brought to us. I mean, it was amazing. And it was, you could tell by all the employees throughout our state that they were very excited about this potential, and maybe for good reason, because it might have been overly generous in the beginning, Mr. Chairman. It actually allowed for you to retire if you were 52 years of age or over, and it provided that the state could help you with your health insurance for a very long period of time. That was just a huge potential liability and undeterminable effects, kind of hard to model. So the committee, Mr. Chairman, came forward with the standing committee amendment. I think several of us on the committee thought, well, there is something here. Now, it is really true, Mr. Chairman, that we have an aging workforce. And based on the response to the Senate File 95, a lot of them are ready to leave state employment. And, you know, there is definitely something to this. But we had to begin to kind of shave it down and get our arms around it. So working with folks that were interested, and our meetings have been packed on this, Mr. Chairman, and we're not done with meetings, to tell you the truth. We're going to have another workshop on it today at noon. But, Mr. Chairman, what this standing committee amendment does is to cut the application down to only folks that already meet the rule of 85. And what the amendment puts in is that in order to qualify for early retirement, or what the carrot would be with early retirement, Mr. Chairman, with the amendment, is that you would get up to 2 years of insurance paid at our current rates. It's like $31,000 for per year for family coverage, and it is $20-some thousand dollars for individual coverage. And so what the amendment does is allow folks that already meet the rule of 85 to receive, if they so decide to take early retirement, and you have to be above 60 years of age, meet the rule of 85, and you can qualify for 2 years of insurance payments. You can also, under the amendment, spread the 2 years.
1 year.
I'm sorry, it's 2 years of payments, though.
Yeah.
2 years, I'm sorry. If I said 1 year, I meant to say 2 years. But, Mr. Chairman, it also allows that 2 years of insurance support to be spread out for as long as 5 years, but the employee has to make up the difference on the payments. So then we began to work with the agencies to try to figure out how many people this actually will affect, and that number has been dropping. We also require that it be from agencies that receive that are primarily general fund agencies, Mr. Chairman. And so I guess what the best thing I can tell you about this whole thing with the amendment, it's still a work in progress, and that we are, but we need to have a vehicle if we're going to pursue this session. We've got two more readings. We're having workshops. With the Standing Committee Amendment, it goes a long ways towards making the agencies a lot more comfortable with it, because we had much testimony in the committee about this will devastate our agency. Over half the people will walk out. So the way this works is the university has been excluded with the Standing Committee Amendment because, as it was mentioned by the sponsor, the university seems to have a pretty good program and flexibility to do it on its own. There's a report required by the executive branch, by the judicial branch, and by the LSO. I've already given you the parameters of the deal. Payment. The way this is supposed to work to be paid for is through the 100 series. The positions that are saved, they'll still get the money for that. And you can, and there's going to be more about that in our subsequent Committee of the Whole amendment, Mr. Chairman. But with that, that's the big overview. Let's hit the high points on the bill. I don't intend to go through it point by point. What I would like to urge the Senate as we track in the amendment is that we are still working on this bill. We don't know how many people exactly are going to qualify. We are getting closer and closer, and as we refine the amendments, we're going to get those numbers. So I hope we will pass the Standing Committee Amendment and then consider other amendments today, move on the bill, and get more information. I invite folks to join us at over the noon hour for a working session, or it might be upon adjournment if that's the way it goes today. But, Mr. Chairman, so you might take a look at the tracked-in session, and you can see that the bill title is slightly changed on line 6, page 1, on filling and transferring vacant positions. We've given the governor increased flex authority to handle transfers between agencies, Mr. Chairman. The part on Section 1 is about the offer of the early retirement, and you can see the Standing Committee Amendment added at the end of page line 6 on page 2. It says, unless earlier withdrawn by the qualified state employee, an election to take early requirement, once granted pursuant to this section, shall not be withdrawn and is a legally binding obligation of the state employee. And you can see we added rulemaking authority with the Standing Committee Amendment on line 9. You can also see that down on line 20, it says the director of the agency may, at the director's sole discretion, but with the approval of the appropriate authority listed in Section C, that's going to be the governor or the Supreme Court Justice or the Management Council, grant the early retirement request up to 2 years after receipt of the request. Mr. Chairman, but in no case shall the director delay granting the request later than June 30th, 2019. New language inserted. If the state employee is an employee of the executive branch, in addition to the director, the governor may, in the governor's sole discretion and with notice to the employee's director, either grant or deny the employee's request. You can see on line 7, we've got who's not included, line 7, page 3, not including employees of the University of Wyoming, not including school district employees. We don't know how to do that. And there's this requirement that it be 50% from state funds. And as you can see, most of the other amendments remove language from the bill, Mr. Chairman. I might be going into too much detail for the folks if I could speed it up a little bit. Maybe that would be a good idea, Mr. Chairman. So the gist of it, though, is we took a very broad notion. We put it into a narrow notion where there's only applies to people with a rule of 85 and at least 60 years old. And we also left in an incentive for people that are above 65, Mr. Chairman, who are still working for the state of Wyoming. They don't care about the insurance piece because they can qualify for Medicaid, Mr. Chairman. But what this bill leaves in there that they can get 3 months incentive pay for leaving. Other things about this whole bill and the amendment, Mr. Chairman, there's a bit of an unknown liability when employees first depart because they have accumulated vacation, they have sick days, so there's an upfront cost there. We're still working to get all that together and figure out how we can use that money to keep the retirement system whole, Mr. Chairman, the savings in the 100 series, because we're not filling all the positions. I think we should go ahead and have questions on the standing committee if that's appropriate. Maybe we can move on to that. And the committee of the whole amendment, which was also been worked on with some more assistance from the budget division, will provide even more framework. But let me emphasize finally, Mr. Chairman, we're not done yet. We need to keep this going and invite participation from the executive branch and others over the next couple of readings.
Further discussion on the standing committee amendment? Further discussion? Are you ready for the question on the standing committee amendment? Question being called for. All in favor of the standing committee amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That's been adopted. We're back on the bill. Or would you like to take the... We do have a committee of the whole amendment. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 95, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 8, line 2.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 95, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, this kind of fleshes out some of the areas that that we had concern in over on page 8. What we do here is that after the governor exercises his sole discretion, authority to transfer up to 30 positions of the remaining positions among parties. Okay, let me go up to the top there, Mr. Chairman. I got ahead of myself. On lines 4 and 5, this is where we make it clear that of the vacancies that 50% of them can't be refilled, they're essentially eliminated, and that's where you get the positive general fund impact on this. The original bill had $42.5 million positive general fund. This one has the expenses have been cut down appreciably. If you get the same participation rate, even with a less crowd, and probably the minimum that we'll make on this is somewhere around $30 million. It could be higher. That being said, we go down and we say after you get that first 50% cut, the remaining positions that can be rehired, the governor has a 30% flex in between agencies and departments, and that's something that the department and agencies kind of wanted as far as that flex. Also, the governor wanted that flex as far as, I mean, I'm not representing that they wanted it, but they indicated they needed some flexibility, and this is how we provided it. Then, Mr. Chairman, we make sure that we go into the area of the 100 series, and this is language that we got from the finance side of the LSO. Then over on Romanet 3, this is how it's currently done. Positions are held open for a time period to pay for the separation and benefit costs. Those are things like sick days and vacation days that are left over. So those positions are normally held over. We said this is the same way this is going to take place. Lines 26 through 31 is an extremely important part here, and this protects the remaining employees from having to pay an unfunded liability that occurs actuarially because these people move out of the system faster than what the actuarial assumptions were. And if they were to remain in there on a rollout basis, they're paying into the system. When you take them out of the system early, then that causes a little bit of a hit actuarially to the system. How we handle that, and we got this from appropriations. It says the Wyoming Retirement Board shall analyze and report any unfunded liability resulting from this act. The state auditor shall certify the savings identified in subsection C of this section and transfer those savings to the Wyoming Retirement Board to pay for the reported unfunded liabilities. So in this amendment, we hold the retirement board completely whole. In the original bill, that hit was about $16.8 million. And primarily the largest part of that hit was from the 52-year-olds to the 60-year-olds. So when we're just dealing with the 60 to 65s, that's going to go down proportionally. The actuary is working on that. It's going to take them a couple of 3 days to get it figured out. Hopefully we'll have that back. I'm guessing we're hoping to have it back on Monday. I'm not sure whether they're going to work over the weekend or not. But my best swag on that is probably going to be somewhere around that $3 to $4 million in that range. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for any questions on the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment. On the Committee of the Whole Amendment. And if there are no questions, I'd call for the question.
We're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Senator Bebout.
And that fund harmless, but are we actually going to take $16.5 million out of general fund money that we might save by the retirement bill and then stick it over there? You know, I would think that they're actuarially sound enough that we wouldn't do that, and I just want to be sure that that's not what this amendment does.
Senator Meyer?
No, it doesn't come out of the general fund. Basically, funds that are saved with the implementation of the act. So there's no new money in this at all. That's why JAC came back without a recommendation, is because there's actually not an appropriation. It's all handled within the 100 series. And so if you have 100 employees, 50 that take the act, you know, or take the early retirement, and you got 50 of them there, that the positions have been eliminated. Now, on those 50 positions, that's where you get the savings from not having to pay those salaries. And out of that amount of money, after it's all done, then we reimburse the costs associated with that unfunded liability to the retirement board. So there's no general fund monies in there. It's just on the amount derived from those savings. And then it's like of the whole 100 positions, the amount of those positions, all any of them can be held open to pay for those separation costs. And that's how it's normally done now. It's like if they lose somebody to retirement or somebody quits or separated in any regard, there's a little tag on that goes back to the employee, and normally the agency will hold that position open from 2 to 3 months, and they book that salary and they pay the guy right away out of their 100 series, but they book those savings, so when they fill that position, then it comes back in and there's no liability against it. And so we're just putting it to standard operations that they do in this bill so they know that that's the way it's supposed to be done. And we do the same thing. The savings go basically on 100. Those come back out of the agencies, essentially on an agency-by-agency basis, and would come back in and flow back to the retirement board. Now, it's going to be a very, very small amount. The average float on the retirement system on a monthly basis up and down is about somewhere between $100 and $140 million. And this, when we've tightened it down to just using the 60-year-olds rather than going clear down to 52, that cost is probably going to be somewhere $3 to $4 million. So it's going to be a very small percentage of what the actual gain or saving is because of the elimination of the positions. And all of the positions aren't going to be filled right away, so we might even get a little bit more money than that. But we wanted to make sure that we could book, you know, 50% of those positions. So, you know, the university has booked 100% of them in their first round of early retirement. We booked 50% thinking that was a good starting point to make sure that this thing would actually cash flow without, you know, costing us money. The one that we did in the 90s, we didn't have that provision in there. And, yeah, we got a lot of people that moved out, and we replaced them with, for the most part, you know, lower salary positions. But those positions got replaced within about 3 or 4 years. We were right back up to the positions that we had. So if we take 50% of them away, as this amendment does, then they have to come back in, basically, and ask the legislature to go through the appropriation process and add a new position back to their agency. Then the governor has flexibility throughout the whole process. This is on the bill, I apologize, Mr. Chairman, not the amendment. But the governor has flexibility in the whole process to say, well, no, this agency is going to be impacted, and we're so he has the whole total flex to determine eligibility. So if you got key men in these positions, the key men stay there. The governor, you know, talks to the agency director, and that's all taken care of. So if there's any other questions, you know, I'll try to scope that out.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really like the provision about the 50%. But the way I understand it, if you have 100 people, we're just talking round numbers, and 50% of them take early retirement, 25 of those positions will not be refilled because that's a 50% requirement. But then you said there's some money out of those savings that will go to the retirement fund, and that's the money that I'm talking about. So that is, I mean, it's not general fund new dollars, but it's general fund dollars that we would have saved. And so the question gets back to where I'm getting at is it better for us to try to put that money back into our revenue stream, or do you really think it's more important because of the actuarial soundness of the retirement program that we put money in there? And that's the question. As a matter of policy, do we keep all the money, or do you really think we need to put it back into the huge fund to help it out?
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This issue about the retirement fund is an important one, and it's one that we don't really know the impacts yet. So we definitely had people testify in committee that they couldn't support this. You know, for example, the teachers are part of this retirement fund. They said they couldn't support this because a bunch of people will be leaving at age 52, and they'll be drawing retirement for all these years. It might be a partial amount, but that is going to impact the viability of the retirement fund. And not to mention also that there is a concern from these folks that represent our school districts and other places that if a lot of people were to exodus state government and that they have we replace them with people with fewer people with smaller salaries, that will also impact the very future viability of the retirement system. I am personally of the thinking that if the retirement impacts are de minimis in the big scheme of things, there's nothing to be lost by making them up. And so whether we decide to leave this piece in or not will be a policy decision. But I can't tell you what the size of the numbers are. I know it's been represented that with this group it'll be small. I think it would go a long ways towards satisfying concerns about early retirement among other groups if we did agree that we will respect the impacts on the retirement center or system. So it certainly could be divided out, but I still think we ought to continue to have the discussion about the appropriateness over the next few days as we actually find out the impacts. My thinking about this whole program, if it is successful, it actually does save money, and we can demonstrate that it saves money. We come back next year, we authorize it at a little higher amount, and we just keep working this as we go forward and maybe we can do a lot of good for folks in state government that want to depart on good terms. We can make state government more efficient. We can keep the retirement system whole, and things can be better for everybody.
We're on committee of the whole amendment.
Yes.
Question being called for. All in favor of the committee of the whole amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Committee of the whole amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question from a constituent. How does this bill affect the non-general fund agencies, particularly YDOT and Game and Fish? And if not, why not?
Senator Meyer.
And that goes into the definition of state funds, and we're going to have to talk with LSO to find out whether we limited that just to general funds or whether what the definition of state funds really is. Now, the reason we don't, and first of all, YDOT and Game and Fish would not be included. Now, the reason for that is that there are certain prohibitions on how other funds can be spent. And talking to the director of the Department of Health in the areas where they have federally funded employees, that they can't use federal funds for an early retirement program. So to pay for the health care benefits, you know, which is the carrot in this on the way out the door, they would have to dip into their other 100 series funds to have a federally funded or a Pittman-Bowes funded employee health benefits or the carrot. And we felt that, well, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to save general funds, and we don't want to obligate agencies to use their general funds to offset a federal fund obligation, which can't be, you can't use federal funds for. So that's why not DOT, Game and Fish, and those folks. We felt that it was that 50%. Then we'd probably break even on the thing, but if it was over 50%, we're going to be losing money. So there will be some impact on some of these agencies where, let's say, they have an employee that's 60% state-funded and 40% other funds. They are going to have a certain degree of impact. If you wanted to tighten that up even more, rather than saying state funds, you would say it's not available to any employee that has any other but general funds. And so, you know, that tightens it up even more. So, and that's certainly a discussion that you guys can tell us from appropriations or anybody else. If you want to tighten it up even more, we can do that.
Further discussion. Ready for the question? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. Just wanted to applaud the efforts of the sponsor of this bill. I think it's a great concept, and it's something that we've tried before, some years ago. I wasn't around then, but the good senator from Lander, who weighed in on this as well and contributed greatly to this bill, was around then. And it wasn't as successful as we had hoped back then. From my understanding, because of that lack of the 50-50 replacement, and so a lot of those positions were rehired, and the savings weren't quite realized that were hoped for. So, but the reason the Revenue Committee looked at this bill strongly was, and gave three of our committee meetings to this effort, was that this is a great tool, considering our budget crunch that we're in, to offer to some of our employees that fit this niche. We narrowed it down. We gave flex ability to step it in gradually and phase it in. And some departments, testimony that we heard, had concerns. A lot of their employees could take advantage of this, and so that would cause some type of a brain drain in their particular agency. One in particular was the Department of Corrections. I think the figure was 30% of their employees could take advantage of this. And so that flex authority that the governor would have in implementing this was critical. But a lot of good testimony. I think it's as mentioned, a work in progress. We came up against the deadline, but we thought that it was worth it to get it on the floor, continue to work it. Second reading amendments, all those ideas that you might have, concerns, we'd certainly welcome those as well, but it would be a great tool, and that's why it's here before you today. So, on in favor of the bill.
Senator Washburger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just I have some very strong reservations on this bill, and I voted no in committee, but I feel like we've changed this bill so much that the fiscal note really isn't comparable to what it should be or what we looked at. And so I would ask that if we could, maybe a new fiscal note. I'd like to know more about the solvency of the Wyoming Retirement Fund. I'd like to know when a COLA was offered and when it will be offered in the future. Just a lot of questions on this fund. I know the original number that we had was 2,000 employees would be available to take this opportunity, and about 55 to 56% of those would actually do so. So that would mean that 1,000 of them would apply for this and go into the retirement system. But then we halved that, so it was 1,000. So if it's 55%, we're looking at about 550 employees that might actually take this. And what that would do to the fund. And for all of you out there, about 400 people a year retire from the state and also our school systems. But I would like to know that whether or not we would see the largest contributors to this fund, which are educators, and what it would do to their contribution.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
I can answer most of those questions fairly simply here. The fund's funded at about 78% right now. That's down a little bit as far as the retirement fund. With the amendment that we put on as far as to hold the retirement system harmless as far as the actuarial impact of this, then it won't cause any current employee, including the teachers, for their contribution to go up. So that takes care of the concerns that the educators had on that. The numbers, and I do have a sheet here. I can distribute it on second reading. It's from the Retirement Center. Basically, they estimate 302 people taking this in for general funded positions, and 60 that are an additional 60 of age 65 or over. So essentially, that's about 362. To really look at it, I think in the next year, if we look at that 400 number and we actually get more than 400 by a certain increment, then we could probably say, okay, these are people that took it because of the early retirement, and we just didn't give them a gift going out the door. And that's the only way you can do that is kind of in a retrospect to figure out whether or not we actually had that big of an impact. And so if we have that big of an impact in addition to the normal retirements, then you can actually attribute that. But the one thing is that they do take it. We do know this, is that 50% of them can't be hired back and the positions are eliminated, and that's where you make the money.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Questions on Senator Wasserberger.
So one last question. So, and that makes sense to me. I mean, it sounds like it might work. But if we say, you have 400 people take the retirement. 200 of them can't be hired back. So average salary is $56,000 a year or whatever it happens to be. So we save that. Does that money go into the retirement fund or does it go into the general fund? Where does that money go?
Okay. Senator Mark.
Mr. Chairman, that money that's saved goes back into the 100 series of each agency to first pay for the provisions that we had in the Committee of the Whole Amendment. And part of that money goes back into the retirement fund to make them whole.
Further questions or discussion? Ready for the question? Questions on Senator Peterson's motion that Senate File 95 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Senate File 95 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next Senate file for our consideration. Senate File 124. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 124, Taxation of Sale and Lease Transaction, an act relating to sales and use tax, sponsored by Senator Kinski, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration, it do pass on Senate File 124, Taxation of Sale and Lease Transactions. For an explanation of this good bill, I refer to Senator Kinski.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Peterson. This bill is short and sweet and simple. The idea is this. A business may, on occasion, hit a rough patch and need to raise some working capital. And it's common in those situations that they would, if they had equipment they owned free and clear that they'd purchased, that they would go to their local community bank and take out a loan, and the bank would write a note for the amount of the loan and take a security interest on the equipment, and then they would proceed to pay the loan. And the title to the equipment would remain in the business's name. Now, it turns out that when a business hits a rough patch and goes to its local friendly community bank, it usually finds that the relationship it has historically enjoyed is not as amenable as it once was. And very often they get turned down or the terms stiffen up. And so in those situations, sometimes a business will turn to a sale lease transaction, sometimes with the very bank that they're used to banking with. And lenders like the sale leaseback transaction because it affords them a little bit more security. If there's a default, they can simply go out and pick up the equipment. Here's the rub. When you sell and lease back that equipment, the state of Wyoming takes the position that that is a sales taxable transaction. In the first situation where you just had a traditional note and security agreement on the equipment you own, that is not subject to sales tax. But when you do a sale lease back, which is simply a different structure for the transaction, you have to pay 6%. It just doesn't seem quite right to me that you should have to pay 6% sales tax to get back the equipment that you've already paid sales tax on. And very often that 6% sales tax is actually more than the imputed interest rate on the sale leaseback. So you're more than doubling the cost of this poor struggling business to go out and borrow working capital. So it's not only are they down, but it's kind of kicking them when they're down. So to go to the heart of the bill, on page 1, this would amend the definition section of our sales tax code. Line 12, you'll see 3915-101, definitions. A, as used in this article, continuing to page 2, we see it picks up the pertinent section of the sales tax code definition wherein sale is defined. And going down to line 9, we make an exception to the definition of sale as follows. The sale and lease of tangible personal property, where the person leases the same property back to the seller, not later than 7 days after the sale, to the extent that the seller paid sales tax or use tax on the original purchase of that property. And then in you'll see below on line 15, 3916-101, the same definition is repeated in the use tax code. Now, you may ask, why 7 days? The original draft from LSO was 30 days. I told them that seemed a bit long. They made it 7. The reality of it is these transactions are simultaneous. We could say 1 minute. It doesn't matter. When you go to the closing, you simultaneously sell the equipment, lease it back, and start making lease payments on it. and typically you repurchase it for $1 at the end of the lease. As to the fiscal impact, my intuition is that these kind of transactions are rare. That was the intuition of the Department of Revenue when they spoke to us in the Revenue Committee. And I think it was their view that while they couldn't determine the fiscal impact, they believed it to be minimal. And with that, I would urge your favorable consideration of this bill, and I'll stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on Senate File 124. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? Senator, Mr. President.
Nope.
The question's on Senator Peterson's motion that Senate File 124 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate File 124 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 165. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 165, School Finance Education Funding Reductions, an act relating to school finance, sponsored by Senator Landon, was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, and Wasserberger. No, Senator Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Excused, Senator Dockstader. Senator Landon, acting on behalf of Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 165 do pass. And there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk, read the standing committee amendment.
Senate File 165, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, that substitute number 1.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for explanation of this very, very important bill, I would relinquish the floor over to my neighbor here to the east, the Honorable William R. Landon.
Senator William R. Landon.
Mr. Chairman, with that introduction, I'll try to live up to it. I appreciate that. Fellow senators, many of the bills we've dealt with up to this point are on the agency side of what we do, and today this bill comes to you to begin discussions about what to do with, frankly, the crisis that we find ourselves in. Senate File 165 is an attempt to begin to address what we know is projected to be a $400 million shortfall in the coming years and bienniums ahead. So what this represents, I will tell you up front, fellow senators, this is not Senate File 165 that originally was referred to committee. Since that time, since the committee received Senate File 165, I believe that your Joint Education Committee has sat through 8 to 9 hours of testimony. There have been a lot of conversations in the hallway, conversations here in the chamber, and the result has been the substitute to Senate File 165. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to try to describe the substitute bill, but I think what my colleague here is telling me about a Committee of the Whole amendment, and I will deal with that, Mr. Chairman, in a little bit here. I think what might be appropriate, Mr. Chairman, at your direction, I think that we might ask for the question on the standing committee amendment because it is the substitute bill, and the substitute bill is what I will refer to as I try to catch you up on what the developments have been.
Question. Discussion on the standing committee amendment. All in favor of the motion to adopt standing committee amendment to 165, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That's been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here's what the substitute bill does, fellow senators. What it attempts to do is, in this coming year of the biennium, remember, we are in a supplemental budget year. We have 1 year left in this biennium. What this bill would do is to draw down the expenditures in the school foundation program by approximately $31 to $32 million. It also does the following. It adopts a fractional ADM by the way we calculate how we count student hours. It puts a freeze on transportation. It calibrates non-personnel amounts to a cost basis. It eliminates the next school year external cost adjustment. Remember, in the last session, for those of us who were here, we adopted an external cost adjustment. We reduced what that was going to be. We divided that in half, and what this does is eliminate it altogether. And finally, it calls for a recalibration effort, fellow senators. That's the gist of this bill. If those calibration efforts do not succeed, this bill calls for a 2.5% reduction in the school foundation funding formula for FY19. And, Mr. Chairman, it calls for an additional 2.5 million reduction or 2.5% reduction in FY20 if that recalibration effort does not take place. What this bill intends to do then is to reduce the funding for this coming fiscal year and send our select committee directly into a recalibration effort to develop that new formula by which we fund our schools. Mr. Chairman, I'll take you into the bill and walk you through what it is doing real quickly, and I want to do this fairly quickly so that we can get right into questions and a dialogue on this very important bill. If you go to page 2, fellow senators, that is the ADM to which I had referred earlier. You'll notice down on line 12, we will now be calculating the ADM, which is how we reimburse for student days, down to hours. Hours refer to our elementary schools. Periods would refer to junior and high schools. And this particular calculation, we feel like, would probably save about $7 million in what we are spending in the block grant. If you move over onto page 3, that is where we put a freeze on what we are doing with our transportation program. That carries over onto page 4. And I'll call your attention to paragraph J, which is new, and Romanet little I, that refers to everything but our bus purchases and leases. Romanet double I, that refers to the leases and purchases of our buses. Once again, that is a freeze. Mr. Chairman, if you move over onto to page 5, that is a continuation of language as we deal with our school buses. And the reason we're trying to be somewhat careful here, fellow senators, is that we have a lot of lease programs, a lot of commitments to purchases. And so what this shows you how we're going to calculate and how we're going to freeze what we're doing with our bus transportation area. That is outside the model, and we estimate that would lead to a reduction of approximately $3 million. I'll take you over to page 6, and pages 6 all the way through page 11 refer to our efforts to the model formulas of and take us to the cost base on these items. And I'm not going to go through them line by line, Mr. Chairman, but that is calibrating the non-personnel items that I referred to earlier to our consultants' level. Mr. Chairman, that takes us over to page 12. And this is where I would like to call your attention to a couple of handouts that I have provided for you. You will notice that one is in letter form, and the other one is a list. If you would like to go to your list, that will indicate to you Senate File 165 and what that would do to your neighborhood district. In addition to that, it references an item that your Joint Appropriations Committee dealt with in the past 2 weeks, which was a letter from the Superintendent of Public Instruction requiring some additional monies to pay for the current year that we are in. So as you calculate what's happening on page 12, that takes into account some of the monies that your Joint Appropriations Committee has agreed to fund back to the department on behalf of the school foundation funds. That amounts to $72.5 million. So that's how we calculate on page 12. Without getting into too much detail, I will tell you that that pays for the borrowing costs, that we're borrowing some money from our permanent funds. That has to pay that back. What comes into play here is the local revenue that's being generated out there, Mr. Chairman. It's up to the state to provide entitlement payments back to these districts, and when that local funding level comes down, it's still up to the state to make that amount whole, and so that's what the gist of page 12 is. I'll take you over onto page 13. This bill would become the precedent over the top of the budget bill, which was passed last February and March, and refers to the previous amendment that that sets precedent over that. That's in the middle of page 13. Section 6, the reductions implemented by this act are intended to be temporary, pending a recalibration effort, and that's where we begin to go into what we propose, Mr. Chairman, for that recalibration. On page 14, we describe five members of the Senate, with one member to be the chairman of the Senate Education Committee, and one member shall be the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, five members from the Wyoming House in a similar manner, and that would be your recalibration committee. It takes you over onto page 15 and explains what we expect out of that select committee and what kind of duties there would be. The amount that could be expended on the work that needs to take place, Mr. Chairman, is to be determined by the Management Council. We put that language in on the top of page 16. On through the bill, we anticipate a cost of about $80,000 for the work of that committee. And you'll notice down on section 7, page 17, that we call in the Secretary of State to certify whether or not that recalibration effort has taken place. And if it has not, that's when we pull in, the provisions of the bill come into play, 2.5% reduction for FY19, an additional 2.5% reduction for FY20. And Mr. Chairman, that is a very quick rundown of this substitute bill. I commend it to you. I think it represents an awful lot of work by the Joint Education Committee. And while it does not represent the original Senate File 165, I think it's a great start, and we can certainly begin a discussion about how we're going to draw down expenditures in our school foundation program.
General Landon, would you like to deal with the committee the whole amendment?
I would at this time, Mr. Chairman. I would move that amendment and ask that it be read in.
Senate File 165, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Substitute Bill Number 1, page 6, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, this is a technical amendment. It tracks into those.
Point of order.
Done, so read in and then moved. Instead of I move it and then please have it read in.
Mr. Vice President, I thought we just did that.
You did, Mr. Chairman, but he said I moved it and then he said I like it read in, so then he read it in and he started talking about it instead of moving the amendment.
Senator Landon, would you please move the amendment?
I would certainly move the committee the whole amendment number one to Senate File 165 again, Mr. Chairman, and it is a technical amendment. If you'll track it in, it's just it's one of those the cost-based adjustments that we're making to one of those items. I would call for the question unless there are any questions.
Questions on committee the whole amendment number one to Senate File 165. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. That amendment's been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions and call on my colleagues in the Joint Education Committee to join me with that, our Senate Education, rather, and thank you very much.
Further discussion. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I applaud all the work and the efforts of the committee. Just one question for my colleague from the Windy City. I see the $80,000 for appropriation for the committee itself. How much will the recalibration effort cost? Where's the appropriation for that? And how quickly do you think we could complete the work of the recalibration? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go ahead and deal with that question. We have some funds left over in our legislative service office, and we've been assured down on the appropriations committee end of things that we have enough money to accomplish what we need to do there. That's the good news. It does need senators to go to the management council for some review, but obviously we're going to have to bring in some experts to help us with this recalibration. We've got the money to do it. We've also been told, and I can defer to my education colleagues on this, Senator, but I've been told, Mr. Chairman, that we can accomplish that work by September.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill going forward, committee of the whole today, probably on third reading, too. But let me rise to say that I am extremely disappointed with this legislation. And disappointment is in two realms. First, I do think we need to think of this education thing as part of our ongoing efforts to reform education. Mr. Chairman, we have funded education in Wyoming and funded it generally, not just K-12, but the community colleges and the university to a great extent. It's clearly been our first priority when you look at how we fund it compared to other things the state government does. Mr. Chairman, we are not getting, and we've been funding it that way for a long time, we're not getting the level of results that we're paying for. So we need to work on education reform further. And when I say we're not getting the results, we are seeing some improvement, Mr. Chairman. You know, with the NAEP tests from that the Federal Department of Education does for all the states, we're ranking fourth, fifth, and sixth, I believe it is, in the nation in the fourth grade results, and 10th and 11th in the eighth grade results. They ought to be up at the top. We are still running a graduation rate that is unfortunate. The figures I have coming out of this guide that was published by one of our leading business organizations that looked at education shows that we're 37th in the United States in graduation rate at 79%. It shows that a third of our high school graduates going on to university and community college still need remedial work in either reading or math or both. Mr. Chairman, it's time we did significantly better. We're also seeing a high percentage, too high a percentage of our our grade school students in the second and third grade not reading at grade level, and I think that's what's producing our high school graduation dropout rate. We just aren't getting the job done in some areas. Mr. Chairman, first step in that is to go in to what we're doing and say there's some excesses in the way we're spending our money, some misallocations. Let's cut, as a first step in reform, let's cut the excesses back. Let's take advantage of the fact we have a fiscal problem. We clearly do. To reduce some of the things we're doing that we're doing too much of or that we don't need to do at all. I think mostly it's things, Mr. Chairman, we're doing too much of. And that's the other problem I have with this bill. I think it is way too timid. I'll suggest to the Senate, we need to go through this and find some places where we can get more immediate reductions. And I think it's in the interest of education that we do that. Because we need, Mr. Chairman, to get rid of the excesses. We need some time to do it rationally. So we need to start now, much more so than this bill does. So I think we need to look hard at class size. I think we need to look hard at not only freezing transportation and reducing it. We need to look hard at the special education. We're the only state and union that does not get the federal government, the Medicaid program, to pay part of the special education costs. That's because of the way we've structured this. I think we need to step forward and say, let's do some of these things now. Let's get started. Let's do the recalibration. Although long term, I think we may have some problems in the whole system we've got there. But let's do the recalibration. But let's get a better start right now so that we can be more effective in the recalibration. Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote for this bill. I'm going to vote for it on third reading, but I think we need to put some more meat in this bill.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I agree with many of the things that my friend from Natrona County just pointed out. I wanted to clarify for the Senate and remind, where we stand with our school funding. What we have done as a legislature is committed like no other state, really, nearly any other state, to funding education. And we've created a legislative model that is here. The evidence-based model that you've heard about is our consultants who have come in to help us determine what that basket of goods is and what level we should fund those schools. And that's about $39 million per year less than what the legislative model is. So much of what this bill does is exactly what my tall friend has alluded to. It is beginning to draw back some of the things that we, quite frankly, don't have to do. We have chosen to do those. And what this does is draw us back toward that evidence-based model, which is right where the consultants say that, as a matter of fact, this is still about $6 million above that evidence-based model. So once again, the senator's right. There's room for us to have this discussion going forward through the readings and see where we go. But that kind of explains a little bit, Mr. Chairman, I hope, what this bill does. It stays in the window between that legislative model and the evidence-based model. Thank you.
Senator Ruffis, would you take the chair, please?
Senator Coe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I want to respond to my longtime good friend and colleague from Bates Creek. when we start talking about performance. And there's another function that goes on in this legislature that we passed in 2011 that is still out there, and that's called the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act. And we passed a bill out of here on leader accountability, and I think these are tools that ultimately out there will help us as we start trying to figure out a way to tie student achievement to what leaders and principals are doing. Back on this bill, the recalibration side of it is, I think, the most important thing we can do as we deal with this particular situation. And I'll say it from one aspect. Roughly 82% of how we fund districts out there is a salary structure, 82%. And recalibration will have an immediate look at that. We'll bring in the consultants that we've had in the past, and I got to tell you that every time we've had a market analysis brought to us, no question that we're much higher than any of the surrounding states when it comes to how we pay everybody, how we pay teachers, starting salaries in particular, superintendents, principals. So I rise in favor of this bill. Do I understand that we're just getting started going down the road that we need to go down? Absolutely. No question about it. But this takes a little bite out of it. Remind everybody that we funded education for 2 years last year. We depleted our entire reserve account doing it. But we'll be back here next February. And I can tell you, I'm totally convinced that the recalibration effort can take place and we can have that back by September. So good discussions. I appreciate all the comments, and I can only tell you that we will continue to work very, very hard to address the problems we have, not only with funding, but with performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Anyone else? Any additional discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I do think the accountability effort shows the continuing commitment of this legislature to reform and improvement in education. And I think it's to be commended. I do think the recalibration effort is going to be very valuable. But I do think we need to get a better start, and I think we do education no favors if we hold back and take little steps when we ought to take some larger ones that we know, Mr. Chairman, are due, because it's a multifaceted thing that's causing our poor performance, and some of it is misallocation of funds. Administration is top-heavy all across the state. Transportation has gotten out of hand all across the state. We need to take some vigorous steps there. Frankly, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the teacher salaries are out of hand, but I think some of the structures they have to work in are and are not being effective. So we'll have quite a debate on some of those things. But I do think, and this is the note I want to finish on, that a few years ago, the then university president, Buchanan, said something that really rings true to me. And he said that Wyoming, with our resources and our situation, should have the best public education system in these United States, kindergarten through graduate school. And, Mr. Chairman, I think there's going to be a lot of back and forth, going to be a lot of disagreement as we go through things here. But I would hope we could all agree that that is our goal, because that is our future.
Further discussion. Senator, Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, members of the Senate, and some great discussion. I want to thank the Education Committee for their hard work to try to come forward with this substitute bill. And I'm here with my tall colleagues saying, we have to start somewhere, and I learned that a long time ago, and you can pick a spot. They've picked a spot for us to start. I think it's appropriate spot to start. I will tell you that in my mind, I think we spend a lot of money in education, and I think we should have a serious look at reductions that we need to start now. But that's a process, Mr. Chairman. You know, we've got two more hearings on this bill, and I look forward to the discussion on further reductions. Quite frankly, if someone comes and wants to put more money back in, I'm absolutely opposed to that. But let's have some discussion on further reductions that make sense. We got a model to work with. We're going to do the recalibration. I think it's a first step. I think the Senate is showing some real leadership in how we tackle this situation. We'll have the weekend to talk to our constituency. Let's see what they got to say, and look forward to working on this next week. So I would ask the body to vote in favor of this, and we prepare for the seriousness of it next week.
Further discussion on Senate File 165. Are you ready for the question? Questions on Senator Pappas's motion that Senate File 165 pass committee of the whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Senate File 165 is passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I make the motion, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may have privilege of the floor.
Are there any committee meetings for noon today? Hearing that, I think none. What I'd move for right now is that, you know what? What's that?
Let's finish.
Never mind, I don't have a motion, Mr. President.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for not having a motion. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 149. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 149, Continuation of Special Districts Task Force, an act relating to the administration of government, sponsored by Senator Case, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, and Pappas. No, Senator Scott. Senator Case, Chairman, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Dockstader, Acting Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 149, continuation of the Special Districts Task Force. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that came out of the Special Districts Task Force. It was one of a package that they submitted to the Joint Interim Corporations Committee. It basically asked to be extended for one more year to work on more issues, Mr. Chairman. And it has an appropriation of $21,000, Mr. Chairman. This is exactly as the bill came out of the Special District Task Force. The sponsors of the bill, myself and my good colleague from Albany County, and you notice the names of the two House members. These were the members assigned to the Special District Task Force, Mr. Chairman. This bill, as proposed by Special District Task Force, didn't make it through the interim committee, but the Senate committee passed this out, and I'm here to ask for favorable consideration from the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Chairman, I think a lot of folks agree that the Special District Task Force did some good work. We had a couple bills already come through here. There were more thoughts that were in progress, including trying to get a procedures manual or a manual about education for all of our various special districts. There was also, we wanted to explore more about budgeting requirements and purchasing requirements and other issues, Mr. Chairman. We do hope that the Senate will see fit to extend it. There was discussion in the committee, Mr. Chairman, that might be a good idea to wait a year and then come back with the task force because we have a couple bills out there, like the budget bill, that we could see how that works out. But I caution us against doing that, Mr. Chairman. The learning curve on this was so steep that I hope we can keep all the people that have been participating, both members of the task force and all the other folks that have been working together to look at special districts. It's an enormously complicated area. There are 675 different special districts in Wyoming. It's over $1 billion, rivaling a third of state government. And we've only truly begun to think about what we can do to make it better. I hope you'll pass this forward.
Discussion on Senate File 149. Senator President Bebout first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my colleague from Fremont County knows how I feel about task forces, but that's not really the issue. What I want to know is we've spent a lot of time the last session working very hard, and a lot of the issues were decided in when they recommended to your corporations committee. I want to know what we really accomplished in terms of specific bills and how we did it. And we can have this discussion next week, too, as we further get into this task force. But what do we really expect to gain relative to what we've already gained? And you can say there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of different ones. But what are we really going to accomplish other than we know there's a lot of them out there and there's a lot of money involved and relative to what we have accomplished? And so, you know, and why not use your corporations committee to do the same thing and have that standing committee take this on as interim work? I'm just trying to get a handle on this to see if we really, really want to go down this road for another task force to continue to study the special districts instead of maybe using the corporations committee as a way to do it.
Senator Case? Let's go to Senator Scott first.
Mr. Chairman, I was the no vote in committee on this bill, and let me explain why. We did, with the combination of the special task force and the corporations committee, bring some major legislation this time, passed through this body. I think it's going to make a big difference, particularly the provisions that allow the county commissioners to review the budgets and call these special districts in to discuss their budgets. Mr. Chairman, it's going to take several years for that to filter through, and I think once we've had some experience with what we've done this time, then it will be time to revisit this issue. There are some Mr. Chairman, there are some things that continuation of the task force could do in the training manual, in the areas of purchasing and bidding requirements, but I think they're somewhat limited. If you continue it for 3 or 4 years, then you have the same group coming back and with their expertise coming back and looking at the results of what we've done this year and saying what we're going to do next. But frankly, I think it's better to discontinue it and refocus it. It's a judgment call, Mr. Chairman, but I think, especially in these hard budget times, we'd be better off with one less special task force and expenditure and pressure on our LSO staff, and then come back after we've had some experience with what we've done this time. But it is clearly, you lose some of the continuity, you lose some of the knowledge that has been gained. So it is, Mr. Chairman, it's a close call.
Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, and I was a member of the Special District Task Force, and I can tell you I'm not altogether enthusiastic about spending another interim on that Special District Task Force, but grudgingly I would do so, recognizing that there is a lot of work left out there. And to be perfectly honest, it probably took us 3 meetings before we even really understood what we were working with and looking at. There are so many different special districts, different types, different concerns, different issues that need to be addressed. It seems to be a bottomless wealth of work that is needed. I could see spending a lot more time trying to tackle the issues that were being raised. We focused on a relatively narrow band in this first year where we tried to look at unifying some of the budgeting, some of the election procedures, and there were a few other areas that we tried to provide some uniformity across the special districts, and Mr. Chairman, we didn't achieve it. We fell short on a number of pieces of legislation because we just lacked the time and resources to wrap our arms fully around those other concepts. I understand the desire to just put it off for a while, but if there is turnover, That's setting back the learning curve to such a substantial degree where it's going to take a number of days just to get back up to speed to where we left it last time. I realize that nobody likes task forces. If we wanted to trim this one back and lead to some savings, we'd probably do that. We had plenty of members. We could scale it back perhaps a little bit to decrease the total cost of the state. I think that's reasonable. But allowing this task force to continue and to try and finish up on some of the areas where we didn't feel like we even began to address, I think would be beneficial to the state, beneficial to the special district task forces, because I don't think they felt we were done either. I'd encourage over the weekend the body to reach out to those task forces to those special districts and ask if they feel like we were finished. I think that's a good way to gauge this. You know, I hope everyone will contact all 600 plus of them and get individual feedback from each of them on whether or not they think our job is done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and four.
Senator Hicks.
Chairman, on and against the bill, and before I start in there, I want to make full disclosure that everybody knows in this body that I work for a special district. I've also been appointed by county commissioners in the past to serve on a solid waste disposal special district. I was elected to serve on a water conservancy district. I spent 26 years in some aspects working, affiliated, or on a board for special districts. Mr. Chairman and members of the body, this same bill was brought to the Joint Interims Corporations Committee that heard every bill that came through the task force. What you're not hearing is about the ones that didn't make it through the Joint Interim Committee. The Joint Interim Committee rejected this task force. And let me explain to you why they rejected the task force. When this was originally approached a couple of years or 2 years ago and it became the task force, there was a lot of discussion with the county clerks trying to address elections issues with the special districts. Well, what happened is we formed the task force, but we didn't put any sideboards on the task force. So ultimately, and I think both of my the previous senators have talked about this, there's 670 different special districts out there. And amongst those, there's 14 different types of special districts. You've got hospital districts that have 70 to $80 million budgets, and you've got little improvement districts that may have a budget of $300 or $400 an annual budget. The trouble is when you throw the task force out there and you're saying this task force is going to study 670 different entities within the state of Wyoming with 14 different types that range from joint powers boards to conservation districts to irrigation districts under the jurisdiction of court, in this bill, there is absolutely nothing that limits down or puts size boards on what the task force is going to study and look at. Well, let me tell you what happened with the task force. The task force had their first couple, two or three meetings because they didn't have clear legislative direction, got off chasing allegations that there was corruption and malfeasance and all kinds of stuff going on with the one or two special districts around the state of Wyoming, and that dominated the discussion of the task force. They didn't have any sideboards, so they went off on a tangent. Actually, the Joint Corporations Committee killed a couple of those bills for that very reason. We had testimony from members of the task force that until there are sideboards put on what the task force is going to study, that they opposed it. There was no consensus among the task force that they even wanted to extend this. There was a dissenting opinion on the task force. So members of the body, I at this point in time, this is the same bill that the Joint Interim Committee recommended, and they killed it. And they killed it for the very purposes is there's no sideboards. 650 different, 14 different types. What are we going to study? This is a bill that just allows them to wander around in the weeds and pick and choose whatever that they want to study. This is a bad bill. This is the reason the Joint Interim Committee rejected it. Until there's sideboards on here and specific issues, are we going to do elections? Are we going to do funding? Are we going to do models? Are we going to do budgeting? What are we going to do? You're just throwing it out to a bunch of individuals that are non-elected to pick which subject that they want to chase off into the weeds on. On it against the bill. It's a bad bill.
Senator Lennon, would you take the chair, please?
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Agar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill. Most of you know I represent an area of the state that has the highest concentration of special districts, and my constituents keep asking for definitions of the different types of special districts, so we're not attempting to do a one-size-fits-all approach. And I think maybe we need to put some sideboards on it in an amendment. But I think we have to seek those definitions so we can give our constituents a solid answer and a way to approach these different special districts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on Senate File 149. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick, and I'd like to answer a couple of questions if I can. Mr. Chairman, it is true that the task force wasn't unanimous about this, and we were very tolerant of dissenting opinions. I insisted, and the committee insisted that be part of our report. I hope over the next three readings of this that we will read that report. I'm going to be happy to share it with you. It is also true that the Joint Interim Corporations Committee was not united on this. It was a democracy, of course, Mr. Chairman, the Joint Interim Committee didn't want to do it, but I brought the bill, and I brought the bill on behalf of members of the task force and the task force work that wanted to do it, and the Corporations Committee agreed with me, Mr. Chairman. In regards to whether we could do this in interim, as the Corporations Committee, sure, if you assign it to us, we'll give it our best. But let me tell you, we have a very, very heavy workload in corporations. And with the utility things that we're talking about taking up with respect to electric power issues and more stuff in other utility areas and then our normal workload of elections, you've seen what happens here. Which committee brings the most bills? And unfortunately, that's just kind of the way it is. It's a hardworking, good committee. I'm very proud of it, but I'm not sure they can fit this on their plate because this took five full-day meetings of a task force. And, yes, I suppose we did hear, we provided a forum for folks to come and complain about things that happened with respect to different special districts. But those things were real. And there's so many districts from the very largest that are well-run generally to some that are not run very well at all. They don't hold regular meetings. They don't have good budgeting. They have reserve policies that are questionable, and they perform activities and extend their mission. Let me tell you one area. We didn't even touch recreation districts. We want to begin to look at that. There are issues about procurement. It's good to have you back, Mr. Chairman. We will. And
it was a great lunch.
It's up to you guys. It's only $21,000. We tried to meet in Casper to keep all the costs down. You got two really good pieces of legislation out of this, and you also saw that the committee took out had a third piece of legislation to remove BOCES from the bill from being having the requirements. Well worth the money. There's more work to do, and I hope you'll let us do it. And then, Mr. Chairman, I also want to say I'm not wed to being the chairman or being even on this district. It's not a kill case thing. But I do think the work needs to continue, and you've got the infrastructure there to do it.
Senator Kinski.
My good friend and colleague, the senator from Lander, asked a good question. I think he deserves a correct answer. What committee brings the most bills? Judiciary. It's judiciary. The answer is judiciary. Thank you.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and having served on the Corporations Committee and on the Judiciary Committee, I get all the bills. But, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I do think is pointing out, and it has been a pleasure serving with Chairman Case and being on the Corporations Committee, and in fact, I'm going to miss being on that committee. But actually, the task force created more work for the Corporations Committee, because there was five bills that came out of that, and two of them were killed by the Joint Committee. So here's the point, and I think it gets to the Mr. President. If we can narrow down what we want to really look at as a body in special districts, I think we can assign that to corporations, because I don't see how that changes the workload. And in fact, the task force created a significant increase in the workload, because it two of the three meetings, we sat there for numerous hours listening to testimony from the task force on a whole range of issues, when if we could have just narrowed down to committee work, it could have been handled by the committee. The operable word here is narrow. What exactly do we as a legislative body want to establish a policy that what we need to look at with special districts? Is it elections? Is it service districts? Is it rural fire districts? Is it conservation districts? Where's the problem that we can focus in on? And until we can be surgical and focus in on that, I just don't see that this committee is, or this task force is needed. I think they're just going to wander around out there in the weeds of Wyoming, and we'll end up in the same situation. So let me tell you one of the bad byproducts of the task force. At our last meeting, because there are 670 special districts, they all have, some of them have elected and appointed, we had special districts showing up that still hadn't heard of the task force. This was an issue that we discussed last year when we were actually established this, is how are you going to reach out to all these entities and get their participation? What we found out by the time we got to the third meeting, we still had people showing up that never had gone to a task force meeting because they didn't know what was going on. And quite frankly, they were a little agitated that the legislature empowered this task force to do this, and we were taking testimony on bills. They'd never even received the courtesy of a phone call, a card, any information that task force was making decisions that's going to impact the long-term ability of those special districts, your fire districts, your rural health care districts, all these districts out there that provide services to your community weren't even notified this was going on, and quite frankly, they were a little upset about it. I think this could be done through the Corporations Committee, Mr. Chairman, with some very surgical directions.
Further discussion?
Question.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They know about this task force now, I assure you, and we tried our very hardest to reach out to them. There's a lot of folks out there. But, Mr. Chairman, here's kind of the issue. We have three levels of government in Wyoming. You have state, counties, and cities. Mr. Chairman, nobody really understands where special districts fit in. And so they are elected and stand alone. And they have their own requirements. But how much is, for example, if it's a fire district that serves an entire county, the courts have ruled that that district could come under the mill levy cap of the county. But what we find is many special districts have been created to get around taxation limits. Now, is this worth looking in at? Yes. If you want to see, this actually does have sideboards. Another thing I'm going to provide for you is the originating legislation for the Special Districts Task Force that listed exactly what we were supposed to do and why we were supposed to be broad-based and represent taxpayers, members of special districts, which the good senator from Bags helped to add that membership. And there's just so much to do. You like the work so far. For $21,000, couldn't you give us another shot? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on Senate File 149. Are you ready for the question? The question's on Senator Peterson's motion. Am I right? No. Senator Case's motion. The Senate File 149 passed Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
Senate File 149 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole. Division being called for. All in favor of Senate File 149, please stand.
15.
Opposed, please stand.
He's up.
No, this is opposed to you. Senate File 149 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole. Senate File 149, having failed a roll... No, excuse me. Pursuant to Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Well, Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Point of order, Senator Scott.
What was the vote?
15-15.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton? Aye. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Coe?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll? No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 15 aye, 15 no.
Senate File 149 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration. Senate File 157. Reading clerk, please read the Senate file.
Senate File 157, Education, Continuing Contract Teacher Status, an act relating to continuing contract teachers, sponsored by Senator Peterson, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Kinski, and Peterson. Noes, Senators Ellis and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with the due pass on Senate File 157, Education Continuing Contract Teacher Status. And I'll go ahead and explain this bill. It has no standing committee amendments, and so it's in its purest form here. This is an old friend. We've talked about this subject before. This is regarding continued contracts for our teachers. It's basically with a different twist, though. It's if you believe in local control, this is your bill. It's basically addressing the concern of guaranteed continuing contracts, and we're just taking in line 4 on page 2, setting a date. Any contract teacher employed by a school district before July 1st of 2017, that had to be changed because of what we do in the new language that's underlined on page 2, section B. And it says this, any initial contract teacher employed on or after July 1st, 2017, who has been granted continuing contract status at the discretion of the employing school district. And it goes on. And I want to point out that wording. It does not eliminate continued contract teachers in the state. The district has the ability and the right to issue those continuing contracts still. But if you go down to line 21 on page 2, length of service as required under subparagraph A of this paragraph shall not be a prerequisite for a school district in granting continuing contract teacher status. Perhaps there's a teacher that the school board or the administrator is not quite sure about even after 3 years or 2 years or whatever that time frame is, and they just don't feel very comfortable about granting that guaranteed or that continuing contract designation to that particular teacher or instructor. It basically doesn't tie the hands of our school boards. It basically unties their hands and lets them consider that this continued contract for teachers is their choice, as it is now. But the time frame of 3 years doesn't basically make it a prerequisite to give that granting of that continuing contract for these teachers. That's all this bill does. Now, there's some arguments that say, well, we're just eliminating guaranteed contracts or continuing contracts. That's not what the bill is. The bill is basically reminding the districts in a kind way that that's their choice. It's not necessarily a prerequisite. And if they feel uncomfortable about issuing that continued contract to that teacher, they have every right to say, we're not going to give that to you this year. I mean, we expect some more things. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill in a nutshell, and that's basically what we're trying to accomplish is giving those school boards, administrators, the right to choose that direction in that particular teacher's case in regard to continued contracts. The problem that, as you're probably thinking now, then why have the bill? They already have this authority. The problem is that there are probably teachers that would say, you know, the precedence has been set in this district. It's pretty common law that you give me, grant me, I'm at my three-year period, I want. And I've, according to your evaluations that I've had, done very well. I'm insisting on continued contract to be given that. So this would basically leave it as an option for those school boards. That's all the bill does. And I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Stand for questions.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I oppose this bill, and there's no surprise with that. But what we're essentially talking about is we're talking about making one of our most important pieces of every community in the state vagabond. What we're talking about is forcing them to move, if they're not given continuing contract status, to move from year to year to year, like we see our superintendents. Our superintendents have an average tenure of about 3 to 4 years in a district. And our administrators have even less. In every one of your communities, the teachers are the heart and soul of your community. They live there. They stay there. We've all had those teachers who were just incredible members of their community. And I can think of those teachers, and I would like to name them by name. Mr. Hammaker, Mr. Osman. Both of them were my physics or math teachers who are still in my community. They've lived there for 50, 60 years. What we're talking about is making them move all the time, simply because they stood up for an issue. In the case of the one educator I'm talking about, he had been a coach for many years and very successful, and he had a bad year with the chairman of the school board's son at a wrestling tournament, the final wrestling tournament of the year, and it just so happened that he was terminated. I don't think that's the kind of society that we want for our teachers. And so if we're going to defend them and allow them to be the heartblood of your community, then you have to continue continuing contract status. And so I see this bill as an effort to really take away from a lot of the communities that we have. And if a teacher happens to get crossways with a school board, then they're gone. Go get another job. What gives them the opportunity to be a part of their community? And we would lose that. We would lose that in every community throughout the state. And so, Mr. Chairman, I realize that we all have disagreements with continuing contract status. We all realize that, yes, there might be teachers out there that aren't doing the job that you would like. But I'm not sure that we want to do this to every teacher out there. Because ultimately, I see that where it's going. I see teachers becoming constant movers, that they keep their van ready to go to another town somewhere else. And so on and against the bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 157, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brief again, because lunch is here and or maybe burning by now, but somewhat of overreaction. Nobody has more respect for teachers than I. And if any of you have been involved in going back to your schools and being invited by a teacher to come and spend a day in their classroom and tell them about your experience down here in the legislature. I do that on a regular basis up there in a school district of mine and great admiration for teachers. Every class, every 45 minutes, a new class would come through that door and they would be different. And you'd have to think on the spot how to change things up to address that particular class, because sometimes they participate, the next class doesn't. There isn't a day I don't go to that school and do what I do for a full day with, I think, 7 different classes. And I come out with admiration for the teachers. It reminds me of the tough job that it is. And it's an honorable job. And I don't think anybody's after the making them vagabonds of our communities. Our teachers are well paid in this state. And this legislature has made it a priority. Education is our priority. I mean, the record states and proves that. The money that we've thrown at it proves that. All this bill does is basically opens up the options for our school districts, our school boards, to take one of those teachers that perhaps is struggling and unwilling to change in their habits, and or maybe it has even become ineffective as a teacher. Yeah, there are some of those out there. Not everybody's a great teacher. I know I'm not. And this opens up those options for those local districts to say, and the point I would make, Mr. Chairman, is if these continuing contracts interfere with due process, guarantees a teacher a job, then I do have a problem with guaranteed contracts or continuing contracts. The due process is there now for even those teachers that have a continued contract. The due process is there for a school board to go in and go after that teacher to remove that teacher. It's there. It's a little more extensive because they've got this continued contract, but they can be terminated. So I don't know, really, what this bill, I mean, to me, it's a gummer bill. It really is doing nothing except giving those school boards the option to deal with some of these teachers that might be a problem for that district. And it eliminates the assumption that guaranteed or continued contracts, that they're protected. There's nothing wrong with somebody looking over your shoulder, evaluating and seeing what kind of job you're doing, especially when it comes to educating our kids. I insist on it. If our principals and superintendents aren't doing those evaluations, shame on them. The work's far too important to let a teacher go 3, 4, 5 years without an evaluation because they've got a continued contract. So, on in favor of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Boner.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly appreciate the discussion that we've had already, and if this bill does move forward, certainly look forward to learning more about the merits of continuing the way that we are with continuing contractor, maybe changing it up a little. But just point out that the concerns I have with the bill is the volatility that will be and tough decisions that we face in our K-12 system, and I think that we also need to consider whether this is going to be the right time for having this discussion and moving this piece of legislation forward when we already have so many more variables in our K-12 system that we're going to have to make some real difficult decisions on. So just want to share that concern. It's a little bit different than the discussion we've had before, and certainly ask the body to consider that, all those variables as well.
Further discussion. Senator Raffas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on and against the bill, and I have concerns with the concept, and it's been a while, I think, since we really went down this alley deeply, but we were there a few years ago. I think it was Senate File 57, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chairman. I remember that number.
Ooh, yeah, I remember that number.
and the discussion that we had then and the discussion now is really, it comes down to how our system works. I think there's an assumption that this tenure is a binding tenure that is irrevocable. But the concerns that we're hearing are addressed by our current continuing contract system. The difference between the initial contract teacher and the continuing contract teacher is what it takes to fire them or terminate them. When they're initial contract teachers, they're at-will employees. You don't like what color clothes they wore that day, okay, well, you're not a teacher anymore. There's a lot of flexibility in that beginning phase. And really, if you don't feel they're a good teacher, if you just don't think they're a good fit for the school, there's an entire flexibility for those first 3 years to terminate, and maybe they'll seek a different position elsewhere in the district. With the continuing contract does not come permanence of that position. In statute, and we can pull that up if this continues, in statute there's a long list of the reasons that you can get rid of a continuing contract teacher, and they include those concerns that were raised by my good friend from the western part of the state. If they're not a good teacher, if they are ineffective, if they've been evaluated poorly, those are grounds to terminate a continuing contract teacher. This does not solve that problem. What this does, if we pass this legislation, it would be to allow all teachers throughout their career to continue as initial contract teachers, no continuing contract, no certainty, no even confidence that they'll be renewed. Every year, they'll be waiting to find out if they're going to be there next year. And you end up with an administrator that comes along and just has a personal conflict with that individual. That is a justifiable reason to terminate an initial contract teacher. I don't like that person. We don't get along. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that with an initial contract teacher. That's what happens all the time. It's just not a good fit. So a new administrator comes in, cleans house, brings in some teachers they like better. That's why we have this system in place, Mr. President, and the system does work. We know from talking to the best administrators in the state, the folks that really do their job, they go into the classrooms, as my colleague talked about, they provide those administrative reviews, they assess and evaluate their teachers, and when they have one that's not performing up to snuff, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, excuse me, they get rid of that individual. And they'll tell you that. In fact, it's the administrators in the schools that don't do those things that end up struggling with ineffective teachers. But, Mr. Chairman, that's why we brought about our education accountability legislation, because we recognized after long discussions that it really is that administrator that needs to have the responsibility for the teaching in the school. It's not continuing contract that's the problem. It's whether or not the administrator is doing the due diligence to hold those teachers accountable for what they're doing within the building, to make sure that they're assessing them properly, evaluating them, and if they are not being successful, find remediation, additional training, or terminate the contract. All of those options are available. We don't have a problem with this right now. We might not be doing it as well as we can because we're not fully implemented with our education accountability system. But that's what we're moving towards. We're moving towards a solution. We have been for almost half a decade now, and it's improving year after year. This is solving a problem that we're really not seeing at this point in time. It's basically that solution in search of a problem. I'd urge the body to reject 157 and have some confidence in the education accountability system that we're laying out.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To paraphrase Mark Twain, the rumors of the death of tenure are greatly exaggerated. I don't see this as a threat to teachers. I don't see it as a threat to continuing contract status. The analysis takes two levels. First, let's talk about school boards, and second, let's talk about, in this modern day and age, what it takes to terminate anybody, continuing contract or not. First, with respect to school boards. My school boards, if you look around at them, are typically half or more retired educators or people who are related to an educator or married to an educator. And I don't see these school boards as being overly aggressive or willing to fire people willy-nilly because they don't like the color of the tie they wore that day. That's just not the way it works. In fact, if anything, it's the opposite. If anything, there is a reluctance on the part of boards to let poorly performing teachers go because it invariably ends up, it is a hearing. It's a hearing. It's a public hearing. It's in the newspaper. Every teacher has their fans, their advocates. They all show up. They pack the boardroom. And it's very easy for superintendents and boards to just let it go and maybe shuffle that person around and not deal with the issue, barring just some really egregious poor performance. So if anything, we don't have a rush to fire teachers. We have a lack of will in most boards to really hold teachers accountable. That's the reality of the composition of most of our school boards. And within that, we have to trust them that they are going to grant continuing contracts status with a certain degree of discretion. The current law, this 3 years, what's so magic about 3 years? What I hear from my school board and some of my superintendents is very often they'll have a teacher, a new teacher, just out of college. By their third year on the job, they may not be ready for prime time. They feel like they can get them there, but now they got to make a decision. Am I going to go to continuing contract status with this teacher and take a chance that I'll be able to get them to where I need them? Or do I stop now knowing that later it's going to be much more difficult? There's nothing here prohibiting them from giving somebody continuing contract on the day they hire them or at 5 years. It allows flexibility to the school boards, which after all, in most instances, I suspect around the state are comprised of retired educators or people related to educators. That's the reality of the school boards. Let's talk about the reality of the employment world today. Let's assume that we had no tenure for teachers and it was all at will, as the initial contract teachers are. You still, in every single school district, have a set of policies and procedures which are effectively civil service protection. They do not specify, show me one set of policies and procedures from one school board that looks like, talks like, or acts like an at-will procedure. They all have progressive discipline procedures. They all call for multiple levels of review before anybody has ever had a sustained discipline or has ever terminated from their position. And that's just the way of the world. I mean, all of the protections that are baked into the law nowadays, there's age discrimination and gender discrimination and all kinds of impermissible reasons for firing somebody, that any employer who does not subject every single performance review and every single termination to multiple levels of review, including with the attorneys, are fools. So there's so many protections in the law right now that even without tenure, our teachers would be very well protected. On and for the bill. Thank you.
Question. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My colleague brings up a good point, and I've seen this happen in my own particular school district. A teacher that has concerns or the administration has concerns about reaches that three-year level in their employment there at that particular district. That district board has an important decision to make. If there are any concerns or doubts, can we work with this teacher and improve? This is the do-or-die situation. The timing is either we fish or cut bait. decision's got to be made. Either we give continuing contract status to this teacher or we let him go. I've seen teachers let go. Is that fair? Yep. So it really forces the issue. Untying the hands of the school board to say, you know, it's not going to just be a prerequisite this 3 years to give a continuing contract anymore. We think we can work with this teacher. We'll give him another year. Things might turn around. Teacher might improve. Things might change. So it's like anything else in life. It's a double-edged sword, and it can be used against the teacher as well as it can be used in their favor. So on for the bill.
Ready for the question? Senator Agar.
Mr. Chairman, I know everybody's wanting to get to the question. I just want to give a little bit of information about where this bill came from. It came out of the district that I represent, and it came out of a sit-down with an administrator who they had a teacher that at 3 years they were at that do-or-die moment that the senator behind me is talking about, and they did not tenure the teacher. The teacher left the state and went to Montana, went on to coach a state champion football team. Now, this administrator was simply saying, if we had the ability to tell this teacher, you're hitting 9 out of 10 of the boxes, let's work another year on this and get there. He said the teacher would still be in their school district today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Ready for the question? Questions on Senator Peterson's motion to Senate File 157, pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
Senate File 157 is passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called for. All in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. Senate File 157 is passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, did you do the count on the last bill?
19 to 11.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, we have one more bill on the board. There's one more bill on the board. We appreciate your hard work. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, that represents the entirety of the Senate files that have come out of committee. We've gone through those. I have this one bill on the board, which the proponents of the committee assure me that is a simple bill, which, you know, we'll leave that. Well, that remains to be seen. But I believe that by doing one bill and then adjourning, that we would send a message that not only can we get our work done on time, we can do some of theirs too, all within the time allotted and still go home early. So, thank you. With that,
so we have one House bill keeping us from lunch. Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Senate rises, do so with a favorable consideration on House
Mr. Senator Christensen, we've got to read it in first, if you let us do
you
that.
Oh, you called right on me. Okay.
The next bill, our consideration, House Bill 16. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 16, Small Claims Appearance Fee, an act relating to small claims procedures, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, was referred to Committee Number 1, which respectfully returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, and Nethercott excused Senator Kinski. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on this non-bloviating small House bill. House Bill 16, Small Claims Appearance Fees, and to present this concise, short, brief bill, Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks, being short, sight, concise. Short and concise, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, if the body would be quiet, we could dispose of this bill.
Oh, he started.
This just gets rid of an archaic provision that hasn't been used for a long time. Please vote aye.
Question.
You ready for the question? Question being called for.
Questions on Senator Christensen's motion that House Bill 16 pass committee of the whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 16 is passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we rise and the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion adopted.
Please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 170, do pass amended. Senate File 95, do pass amended. Senate File 124, do pass. Senate File 165, do pass amended. Senate File 149, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 157, do pass. House Bill 16, do pass. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, move for adoption of the committee of the whole report.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Committee of the whole report is adopted. Oh, Senator Landon.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I just wanted to send a salute back to our majority floor leader. That was one of the smoothest rides I've ever had on the committee of the whole airplane, and I thought he landed it pretty softly, too. So I just wanted to send out that thanks.
Well, let's congratulate the majority floor leader, members of the Senate. Well, with all, Senator Ellis.
Or Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may.
I believe one of our colleagues is having a birthday tomorrow.
No,
if we wanted to all engage in a round of happy birthday, I believe Senator Peterson would like to maybe lead us in that charge.
Well, Senator Peterson has a magic voice. Let's do. Who is it? Who's having the birthday?
It's not me.
Okay.
Yes.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Sarah. Happy birthday to you.
Yay!
Senator Case.
But our own Katie Heaton is having a birthday this weekend, too. And it's a little bit more than Senator Nethercott's and one more than last year.
Should we sing happy words? Is Katie still around? Oh, she left for the day. Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Nethercott, there's a tradition in the Senate about when you have a birthday during the session that you do certain things. Have at it. I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. Senator Peterson.
Give me all your troubles.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, thank you. I heard she sings very well. Oh. She can maybe sing a song for us or something.
Well, it's all right. Okay.
Or a round of drinks, whatever.
Mr. Vice President.
Our privilege of the floor,
you may.
Mr. President. The Wyoming Arts Alliance was having lunch up in the church and about 20 more minutes left in that. So if anybody needs lunch when we're done here, they can run up to the church and Wyoming Arts Alliance. And tonight is the Governor's Arts Awards, and I do have two extra tickets if anybody needs them.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, before I make the motion, two things. One is please travel safely for traveling out of town this weekend. There's been some weather, and so please be careful and come back to us safely. Second thing would be thanks to the only reason it works well is we have a great Senate staff that makes us look good, makes all of us look good. And so to our chief deputy and her and all of her minions, we should give them a round.
Hey!
And finally, the other thing, Mr. President, is I think there's 200 or so House bills headed this direction. So one down, 199 to go. Obviously, it's just physically impossible for us, the Senate, to work every one of those bills. So there'll be a culling process at the President's office, culling process. I think that's got to happen with the body as a whole. There'll be some culling processes that need to happen in committees. But our job will be to make sure that the best ideas that come out of the House, that they come up and we get a chance to consider them and debate them and pass them into law. So, again, it's just, we're all going to have to work hard and be selective, and I expect a little bumpier ride in the second half, but we'll see how it goes. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m., Monday, February the 6th.
Announcement, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, is going back to work at 8 o'clock Monday morning, Jonah Room, S-19. I'd remind people these are just House bills, but we're going to start them. House Bill 8, Engross, Student Data Privacy, Security, and Transparency. House Bill 9, Student Ownership and Privacy Rights. House Bill 38, School Finance, Interfund Borrowing. House Bill 39, Education Resident Tuition Reimbursement. And House Bill 42, Education State Board of Education Membership.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. House Bill 112, Engrossed EMS Licensure Interstate Compact. House Bill 111, County Collective Accounts.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet Monday about 15 minutes after noon recess, Jonah Room, S-18, to consider House Bill 3, Engrossed Cease and Transfer Priority List, House Bill 32, Engrossed Ski Safety Act.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday at 8 o'clock, Jonah Room, S-18, to consider the following House bills. House Bill 192, Court Automation Fee. House Bill 188, District Court Filing Fees. House Bill 144, New Trial Based on Actual Innocence. And House Bill 161, Divorce Residency.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet Monday the 6th. 10 minutes upon adjournment in Jonah Room S-27 to consider the following House bills. House Bill 78, Engrossed Salvage Title Updates. House Bill 51, Engrossed Borrowing Authority for Department of Transportation. House Bill 52, Engrossed Governmental Immunity Cooperative Public Transportation. House Bill 65, Engrossed Public Safety Communications Reorganization.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. There will be an informal meeting of folks interested in Senate File 95, the early retirement option. We've got some folks from agencies here. Everybody's been invited. We're going to meet back in the revenue meeting room. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just an announcement. Speaking of staff, our kitchen staff did prepare lunch. If you wanted to grab something and go, there is something there, too.
Senator Offutt.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a final reminder about Legislator Day at the University of Wyoming tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., a meeting to be picked up by the bus to head over to the university at Little America, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Minority Floor Leader. You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate will adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday, February 6th. Safe travels.